You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
September the 15th, 2021, it has hit the fan and hit the fan in big time. This latest Bob Woodward book claiming that Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, made calls to China, his counterparts in China, supposedly held two secret phone calls with his Chinese counterpart 4 days before the 2020 election, and then again after January 6th to reassure him the U.S. would not attack China, but if President Trump decided to do it on his way out of office, he would alert him immediately. Now, again, that's just statements in a book. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, says the book does raise some serious concerns. Some of the allegations seem far-fetched to me. But we will be having General Milley and Defense Secretary Austin in front of Congress in a few days, and we will address these concerns. Let's not jump to conclusions. Well, Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, already says that Milley does need to be interviewed and face consequences. Senator Rubio is already calling for his resignation. And former President Trump said, and I'm quoting in a statement, if the story of dumbass General Mark Milley, the same failed leader who engineered the worst withdrawal from the country, Afghanistan, and he goes on and on and on. He says, if it's true, he should be tried for treason. We're going to get into this in a lot more detail coming up in the next segment. In the meantime, Republicans and Democrats on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee are extremely frustrated that the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, still will not show up and answer questions about what happened in Afghanistan. They're considering issuing a subpoena demanding he be there. And that includes the chair, Bob Menendez, Democrat, New Jersey. And we also need more information on Afghans that we're bringing in. Are we properly vetting them? How many actually do we have in, and how many more are we going to bring in? The latest news from the Center for Immigration Studies reveals that the number of Afghans in the U.S. has shot up to 133,000 in 2019, three times the amount we had before 9/11. And we're bringing 50, 60, 100-plus thousand still in. And we've had the Democrats pushing forward under the Biden administration with a plan that these tens of thousands of Afghans will quickly be able to apply for permanent U.S. residency, and they will also be guaranteed lifetime welfare. Sucks to be an American citizen, huh? Oh, and don't forget what's happening at the border. The DHS now is saying that more than 200,000 migrant encounters were recorded in the month of August. And again, we don't know how many of them coming across have been properly vetted and are carrying COVID while you are under orders that you must get a vaccine or you'll be penalized, ostracized, maybe even lose your job. In the meantime, President Biden's claiming, oh, there's overall positive support. The Americans opposing vaccine mandates are, quote, a small percentage. Well, you look at what happened in California, and some would say, yeah, that's kind of proof, because look at the way Gavin Newsom locked down the state of California. And everyone was sure that his draconian lockdown of California would certainly force him out of office. The recall would work, especially when he went to that French Laundry restaurant in Napa Valley, everybody having a good time, no mask on, when he had told everybody else, no restaurants, no one in closed areas, no one without mask. Well, when it was finally done, Larry Elder, his challenger, conservative radio talk host, Larry Elder. Going to have to go back to being a conservative talk host because Newsom, the Democrat, by a 60%, the recall effort was denied. So if he's not being recalled, then there was no vote as to who would replace him because he's still in office. Oh, and Newsom says, we voted for everything. We said yes to the important things that mattered not only to Californians, but to Americans. I'm going to contest that point, that very point, before we wrap up this hour. Stand by, please.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief, and the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
It should be investigated immediately today. He should be questioned under oath, if not with a polygraph test, whether it happened. If it happened, he should be immediately relieved of his duties and court-martialed. You have to find out if it's true. This is innuendo and rumor and propaganda, perhaps. But if it is true, absolutely immediately needs to be removed. We have elections. We can't have generals overturning elections. That's what we have always criticized in authoritarian regimes where the military takes over. This is very, very dangerous. And if this happened, Milley needs to be immediately removed of his command.
The key phrase, if this happened. Those are the words of Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky. If this happened, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, isn't waiting to find out if it happened. He's already calling for the resignation of General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. What set all this off? It's a new book that is out by Bob Woodward and a co-author, Robert Costa. And they claim that Milley was worried that President Trump would go rogue. So Milley orchestrated back-channel phone calls with China's top general, saying, you and I have known each other now for 5 years. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise. My God, if that happened like that, if that is exactly what he did, and if there's a transcript somewhere documenting what I just read, and Milley made that response, you're talking about treason. I'll let Senator Rand Paul continue his dialogue.
If you're calling up our adversaries and saying, we think the president is such a loose cannon that he might bomb you, that actually puts them on red alert. And actually, if there happens to be, which there are instances where there are false warnings of attacks and we have to talk to each other, if we have a general calling China and say, our president is liable to unleash nuclear weapons on you or unleash attack on you, that makes any kind of accidental war even more likely by him ginning up the game. It's a terrible thing, very dangerous. But just by defying the chain of command, it gets outside of what we have as a constitutional republic.
So let's talk about that, what we have as constitutional republic. Chapter 115 of our U.S. Criminal Code. Treason, sedition, subversive activities. Specifically treason. Whoever, owing allegiance to the U.S., levies war against them, or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the U.S. or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death, or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years, fined under this title not less than $10,000, shall be incapable of holding any office under the U.S. Now, again, this is just an allegation in a book. But again, as I said, Senator Marco Rubio is already pretty much accepting it. He said Milley has already been interfering with American civilian-controlled military in various ways anyway, in his opinion. And Senator Rubio said, I do not need to tell you of the dangers posed by senior military officers leaking classified information on U.S. military operations. But I will underscore that such subversion undermines the president's ability to negotiate and leverage one of this nation's instruments of national power in his interactions with foreign nations, and that General Milley has attempted to rationalize his reckless behavior by arguing that what he perceived as the military's judgment was more stable than its civilian commander. Now, again, those are statements from Senator Marco Rubio, and Rubio is the one that's saying General Milley attempted to rationalize his reckless behavior. I want you to keep in mind who's saying what. I haven't seen anything that says Milley said that. I haven't seen anything that documents or adds to the claim in this book titled Peril by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. But again, they said in that letter, or rather in the book, that Milley made back-channel calls to his counterpart in China, saying, we've been friends for 5 years. You know I'm going to keep you informed and up to speed on what's happening. I will let you know if Trump is going to attack. Does that sound too far-fetched for you? Does that sound like that is truly fake news? Does it sound like it's something that's feasible at all? The Joint Chief of Staff, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is appointed by the president and with the advice and consent of the Senate. They select someone from the regular components of the armed forces. And the chair serves as at the pleasure of the president for a term of 4 years. The functions of the Joint Chief of Staff are pretty limited. It's really just more or less coordination, providing strategic direction for armed forces, review major material, personnel requirements, establish joint doctrine, is not to command troops in the field, is not to give the go order on a launch for missiles, none of that. It's just kind of like, well, in the military, you hear chain of command. That's part of the chain of command here, that if you're going to get anything to the president, you have to go through the Joint Chief of Staff. And if the president wants various armed forces to do something, he has to go through the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that would include the chair, of course. So this book by Bob Woodward and his co-writer, author, claiming that Milley was making these back-channel calls, making those kind of remarks that I will call you if Trump's going to do anything, that I will let you know in advance. Senator Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, is not going as far as Rubio for sure, not even as far as, at this point, Senator Rand Paul. Senator Cotton.
The book raises some serious concerns. I'd say some of the allegations seem somewhat far-fetched to me. But General Milley and Secretary Austin are going to be testifying in front of Congress in just a few days, and we'll address these concerns. We don't want to jump to conclusions yet, but we'll certainly vet them and see exactly what happens.
That will be a key point. Of course, we can't even get General Austin to come talk to the Senate committee right now about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. He's refused to go. Is it because he's afraid he will end up having to either take the fifth or face perjury if he testifies? And then what's going to happen when you want Milley and Austin there to discuss this, these calls that were made back and forth? And if Milley was, if Milley made those calls, would General Austin have known about it as well? Now, again, to Senator Rand Paul, he says, I want to get to the bottom right now. He says it's time for us to question Milley and do so immediately.
Should be immediately ordered into a room for an interview, not just a press interview, for an interview with polygraph, which we do often for our intelligence officials. And he needs to be asked, did you call the Chinese government in defiance to your commands? Did you warn them or insinuate to them that the president might attack them?
And again, Senator Rand Paul says that should be done under polygraph. Now, you understand and know that a polygraph is not admissible in a criminal court case. It may be used to either maybe make someone feel uncomfortable, and it may or may not catch them in a lie. Years ago, I did a series on the polygraph, the effectiveness of it, if it truly could detect lies or different from a fact, and I purposely lied on a couple of questions I'd set up. It caught me on one indecisive, one it just let go through. And then on two or three other points that were truthful, one of those got called a lie. So that's why you can't use a polygraph when it comes to a criminal case. But Senator Rand Paul says, let's put him on a polygraph and find out. Again, here's Senator Cotton, Republican of Arkansas.
I will say this, though, that book also reports what's been widely reported, what we've heard in Congress just over the last 2 days in testimony from intelligence officers and senior military officers, that Joe Biden disregarded the military advice he received earlier this year about what would happen if he went forward with his disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. And we ought not to forget that. We ought not be distracted by that ongoing from that ongoing fiasco for which there's so much work still to be done.
And that is a key point, because this is the kind of thing that does maybe draw attention away from how badly we screwed up when it came to getting out of Afghanistan. And in fact, as members of Congress, both in the House and the Senate, were trying to conduct various hearings and get some answers, some of them made it very clear they've already decided by just looking at what happened. And you, my friend, sitting at home, when you watch what's happened, that you see thousands swarming a tarmac where planes can't even take off or get or land, and then when a U.S. plane is taking off, Afghans so desperate to leave and get away from the Taliban, they're clinging to the outside of the plane and then falling to their death as the plane goes higher and higher. And yes, some of these members of Congress, including Senator Rand Paul, made it very clear this was an absolute disaster.
Never in my worst nightmares did anyone or conceive of such a colossal incompetence. Abandoning Bagram Air Force Base will be remembered as one of the worst military decisions in our history.
President Biden has described the evacuation from Afghanistan as an extraordinary success. This has to be the lie of the 21st century. You nearly dislocated your shoulder, though, patting yourself on the back for the great job you've done.
Yeah, that's true. And you also had House Foreign Affairs Committee ranking member Michael McCaul, Republican of Texas, said there's still about 10,000 interpreters who worked with U.S. forces in Afghanistan, and they're gone. The Taliban will not allow them to leave, or they've already been executed. And we had a report just today that a Afghan troop sniper trained by the British was put in front of his family and executed in front of his family. Trump was going to move the troops out, but he set a May deadline, May 1, but he set down conditions, and he made it very clear you must follow the conditions. And here's Senator James Risch, Republican of Indiana, on that point.
In the last administration, when a plan was put on the table, there was very clear communications to the Taliban. If they didn't meet those commitments to reduce violence, etc., there were going to be dire consequences. They believe that. In this particular instance, this administration went out of its way time and again to telegraph to them that they weren't going to push back, starting with the withdrawal of air cover, abandoning Bagram Air Force Base. By the time this happened, the Taliban were convinced they could run right over the country, which they did.
Which they did. And now, of course, we're bringing thousands of Afghans into our nation, not being properly vetted. Congressman Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama, joining with other Republicans in a letter to the Department of Homeland Security. We need extreme vetting to protect our national security. And, of course, we have that other very big, very big, very pressing issue. How many Americans did we leave behind? We'll pick up that part of the story when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The Foreign Relations Committee staff had cranked on the administration for a long time to get numbers, and they were giving us numbers way up there, 15,000, 20,000 Americans, and by their own admission, they got 6,000 Americans out. What happened to the rest of them? I mean,
have you not gotten an answer to that?
Have not gotten an answer to that. And it goes deeper than that, as you said. The special visas and those kinds of things, they haven't come close. Haven't even come close on those numbers.
So in the Foreign Relations Committee, do you have an estimate of how many Americans you think are there? I mean, they're saying roughly 100, yeah. But the difference is pretty great.
It is very significant. We have no way of knowing. All we can do is take their numbers.
That is not very satisfying, to take their numbers. That's Senator James Risch, Republican of Indiana, on Fox, Brett Baer. Admitting, yeah, we don't know. We had to rely on their numbers. We don't have any numbers. We had to rely on them. But it's more than 100, as they want you to believe, that we left behind, stranded. Of course, you still have the White House storyline is, well, some of them didn't want to go. If that is because they were not allowed to take their family members with them out of Afghanistan, I would understand that. I can't abandon my family. I'll stay here with them and we'll just all suffer or be killed or both. And then we're told that some were too sick to get on the flight that was available for them. I don't know about that one. That's kind of goes along with General Austin as to why he has not appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The official response as to why he hasn't shown up to answer questions about the withdrawal from Afghanistan, he's busy with, quote, other commitments. Other commitments? Senate Foreign Relations Committee wants you in front of them to explain what happened in Afghanistan, and you got other commitments? And, of course, right now, while we're in the midst of trying to decide or find out, one, how many Americans are still there that we need to get out that are stranded, and they are, if they're not directly in the hands of the Taliban, they are still being held hostage, and at some point they may show up on some video. And some of these SIVs, special immigrant visas for those who worked with our forces, Congressman McCall has already stated there are about 10,000 of them, they're gone. They're gone. We don't know if they're not allowed to leave or they've already been executed. And then you've got many saying, well, the Biden administration needs to move quickly to recognize the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan. And to that, Senator James Risch has this response.
Under the present conditions, I'd say we shouldn't. I mean, we don't recognize coups, and this was a coup. There was a democratically elected government in place that a lot of men and women in the United States gave blood for and that we all paid treasure for. They were in place. And they've been toppled by a terrorist group. To call them a government, I think, is obscene.
It is obscene. And he goes on to say it's also a slap in the face of everyone who served in Afghanistan. In the meantime, three Republican congressmen have told Secretary of State Blinken, you need to resign. You need to resign because this thing is totally botched and it's on your hands. What's Blinken doing as he submitted his resignation letter? Don't hold your breath, my friend. Of course, he has not submitted it, and President Biden's not requesting it or even demanding it. And when it comes to recognizing the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan, keep in mind, we have not been properly vetting Afghans we're bringing to this country. If we agreed to those SIVs, we're going to get you and your family out of Afghanistan, great. But then before we bring them to this country, we need to verify who they are in these staging areas, be it in Germany or Qatar or wherever else we are. You don't bring them into the U.S. unvetted. But no, that's what Secretary Blinken says. Well, we're doing it on the back end when they get to the U.S. These are the same Taliban, and Blinken even had to acknowledge that, yes, some men, older men, are bringing in young children who are actually their child brides. Well, the recall election in California did not go the way many of us wanted it to go. That story coming up.
Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
It's a fact that Ackerman Toyota is improving the local community. Jay Ackerman had a vision, and you can see the Ackerman Toyota dealership created a beautiful showplace at Hampton, just north of Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota, sponsoring the next segment, new or pre-owned. Ackerman Toyota, for life.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
But ultimately, I decided to run because I felt that I could do something about the crime. I could do something about the homelessness. I could do something about the fact that California has now hit $800,000 average price of a home. That's 150% above the national average. Outrageous because of the stranglehold the environmental extremists have had over Gavin Newsom. They're going to have to pay attention to that now. They weren't going to before, but now because of us, because of you, they're going to have to pay attention to that. So we have lost a battle, but we are absolutely going to win the war. Absolutely.
Those are some of the remarks last night. Those were some of the remarks last night by Larry Elder, conservative talk show host, as he was telling supporters, be gracious in defeat. The first part of that ballot yesterday and over the last few days, as they've had it over several days for the voting, and, oh, yes, folks could print off their own ballots at home if they wanted to. How that worked and how that was checked, I haven't even gotten into. But there were polls taken early that showed that Newsom was within the margin of being even on keeping his office or maybe even losing. The recall was point one, do we recall Governor Newsom? And if that passed, then who should you want to replace him? And that's where Larry Elder would come into play. And Larry Elder was leading the candidates that were on the list. Newsom could not be on that list. But as of this morning, the vote to not have the recall, 64% to about 36%, those favoring recall. As you heard Larry Elder say, but what we have done is force them to pay attention to some of the issues that we consider vital and to deal with them. I'd like to think he's right. But if you only have 30%, or let's say 36% in California on this major, major issue of starting with the recall, I'm not sure you have lost the war and won the battle, as he said. It might happen with inside the Democrat Party in California that they will decide this is out of, well, they already know it's out of control. They know it's out of control. They know that all these restrictions and mandates and lockdown are hurting them. But apparently many California residents are just willing to go along with it, partly because if it doesn't directly affect them and bother them, why not? I mean, really, friend, do you care? Do you care if we issue an order today that anybody making more than $5 million has to give $4 million of it to the government? Do you really care? It's not out of your pocket. It doesn't affect you. No, only when it's a backyard issue and it's affecting you directly, then folks seem to get involved more. Well, we're seeing that on school boards right now. Normally not a big deal for a school board to be elected to school board and what goes on, but now with the push we've seen for critical race theory and other things like that, there's more interest, concern, and folks are getting involved. So anyway, Larry Elder told his folks to be gracious in defeat and consider that we have made some gains and they will have to listen to us going forward. And Gavin Newsom got up to make a speech. He said, it's not just about me, it's about what we endorsed by saying I'm not to be recalled.
We said yes to science. We said yes to vaccines. We said yes to ending this pandemic. We said yes to people's right to vote without fear of fake fraud or voter suppression. We said yes to women's fundamental constitutional right to decide for herself what she does with her body, her fate and future. We said yes to diversity. We said yes to inclusion. We said yes to pluralism. We said yes to all those things that we hold dear as Californians, and I would argue as Americans.
Does that include saying yes that Governor Newsom, you can put your kids in a private school while the public schools are ordered closed because of COVID? Or that you and your rich friends and those on your medical boards for the state can go to Napa Valley at the French Laundry restaurant, a very expensive restaurant, and have a little birthday party and have laughter and no mask, all in a small enclosed room? Is that what they also said yes to? In fact, some have said if it weren't for the French Laundry thing, the recall election probably wouldn't have gotten any traction whatsoever. That and the lockdown. Which also brings me back to something else Newsom said. We said yes to women's fundamental constitutional right to decide for herself what she does with her body, her fate, and her future. I guess that means they said no to men doing the same thing. But more importantly, it's her body, her decision when it comes to having a baby or not. It's not your body, be you male or female, when it comes to a vaccine mandate, which Newsom is all in favor of, and President Biden is saying, listen, there's only a small percentage of folks that don't like it anyway that are against me, only a small percent. And keep in mind, the whole idea was to vaccinate the unvaccinated, protect the vaccinated, which makes no sense. But again, was this a referendum as well upon vaccine mandates? Oh, and then Newsom decided to wax poetically and get a little emotional about what's really at stake here is reference kids.
And I just wonder, you know, I've got four young kids. Oldest about to turn 12 this weekend. And what they're growing up to. In a world where we're so divided, these kids increasingly fearful, isolated, disconnected. And we're teaching them that. And it doesn't have to be that way. I think we owe our kids a deeper sense of respect and all of us as adults a responsibility to disregard this false separateness. We're so much more in common as a state and a nation than we give ourselves credit for.
Oh, he's so gracious. And we got to stop doing things that are divisive. That party, his party, and the Hollywood elite, the Democrats in general, the far, far left in particular, are always looking for a way to divide. Perfect example. The LA Times came out and basically called Larry Elder the black face of white supremacy. The black face of white supremacy. And then you had this woman in a gorilla mask. Elder later said, well, maybe it wasn't a mask. I mean, anyway, throwing eggs at Elder, trying to hit him. Newsom didn't say anything about it, didn't say it was bad, shouldn't do it, didn't call out the person or anything, and the media in that area wouldn't do anything about it either. They raised no question. They just kind of let it happen. As far as Elder says, it was simply another example how the LA Times and many Democrats always like race baiting.
I have never suggested that anybody should vote for me because I'm black or against me because I'm black. I don't go there. As far as I'm concerned, after we elected the first black president, everything else after that is anticlimactic. Okay? Okay? But, front page article in the New York Times. It was negative. All about me. Never once mentioning my race, that I'm black. Never once mentioning that if I were to win, I'd be the first black governor of California. Now, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. But on the same page, equally long article about, quote, the first female governor of New York. Now, she had a D at the end of her name, so it's relevant she's the first. I have an R at the end of my name, and suddenly I'm no longer black. It's amazing how that happens. Astonishing how that happens. How astonishing how that happens. They try to divide us on race. They want black people not to think about the fact that families have been destroyed because of the welfare state. They don't want black people to think about the decline of the quality of public education. They don't want black people to think about jobs. All they want is black people to think about oppression, that you are under siege. You are a victim. Really? In 2021, after we elected the first black president who got a higher percentage of the white vote than John Kerry did 4 years earlier, knock it off. Knock it off. Knock it off. It divides us by race. We believe in the dream of MLK, dividing, judging people by content of character, not color of skin.
The words of Larry Elder. And, of course, a Hollywood celebrity supporting Gavin Newsom said, thanks for your leadership in the Golden State. Look forward to many more great years. Did this election have anything to do with the 2022 coming up? Could it affect 2022? We'll take a look at that story in a moment.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
It was 1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So, the California recall election, 60+% say Gavin stay in office. Is that a precursor of what we're going to see for 2022? It's the state of California. I mean, if Larry Elder were able to win, that would have been phenomenal. But, of course, he couldn't even be considered if they didn't first vote to recall Newsom. That a two-step process. They had to decide he is so bad, we don't like him, we don't like what he's been doing to the state during COVID and how he's handling everything and his privilege. You boy, you talk about privilege. There you go. And especially white privilege in Hollywood area to go out and dine wherever he wants, when he wants. And same thing with Nancy Pelosi. Go get her hair done while other places are ordered closed. They had their privilege. All of that aside, it still was California. Will it translate? Does it reflect on what we might see as 2022? Well, before the results came in, there was a piece written by Douglas Schoen, Democrat political consultant under Bill Clinton, did work on the 2020 Bloomberg presidential campaign, and he wrote an op-ed that shows signs are pointing to a Republican landslide next year. He said the marked decline in support for Joe Biden and his administration nationally and in key swing states indicates that the Democrat Party could endure a blowout defeat in the 2022 midterm elections. All from his lips to God's ear. He also points out Biden is in a significantly weaker position now than most of his most recent Democrat predecessors, Clinton and Obama. And in fact, Obama's approval rating at the same point in his presidency was 19 points higher than Biden right now. So Doug Schoen is of the belief that come midterm, it could be a Republican landslide. He's pretty good at politics and choosing and selecting thing. I mean, he doesn't put it out there with his name like that if he thinks it's going to bite him in the arse, but which we still have some time to go. Take note of this story that I told you yesterday about the lavish Met Gala in New York City. I was there. Did you see me? Oh, yeah. It's a $35,000, $30,000 ticket to get in. And I was there. I was wearing a very fashionable tuxedo. I mean, of course I wasn't there. If I were there, I would have had a chance to talk directly to AOC, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat in New York, because she was there. And she was there with a white dress that caused a social media firestorm. Keep in mind, tickets for this event cost at least $30,000 each. And she's wearing, and everyone there is those who want to be seen and to be seen and talked about and gossiped about and jealousy and all that reigns. They're all rich, generally. But this dress she wore said, "Tax the rich." Well, you might have thought that would have been offensive to those attending. No, they all thought, it's kind of neat. But there was one group that came forward. The American Accountability Foundation, a conservative watchdog group, filed an ethics complaint against AOC. She was at this event. That's a violation of ethics. Well, a spokesman for the Met said, she was a guest of the museum. In other words, she didn't pay. Well, the American Accountability Foundation argues that her invite fails on both exemptions. The gala was not widely attended, because the invitations were overseen also by a for-profit company. AOC said in an official statement previously that she was there as part of her official duties. Official duties. And she had a response to those critics flying off the handle the fact that she was there. In a tweet, she said, "New York elected officials are routinely invited to and attend the Met due to our responsibilities in overseeing and supporting the city's cultural institutions for the public. I was one of several in attendance this evening." And again, the Met said she was a guest. Well, the A AAF, the American Accountability Foundation, still says that's a violation of ethics, and there should be an inquiry because that was receipt of a gift. And it must fall under either the widely attended event or charity exempt event as defined by the House. And it meant neither one of those. And I still haven't heard, does she get to keep the dress? Was that also a gift? Not that I care really, but I mean, yeah. You probably had the same thought, didn't you? Yeah. As always, I appreciate you joining us and listening to us. You are helping this program grow by leaps and bounds. These 2 hours from 1 to 3 every day, Monday through Friday, you are helping us lock up big numbers and audience, and I appreciate it. I appreciate your loyal support and you encouraging family and friends to join us. We'll do it again tomorrow, of course. And please, please do keep in mind, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.